They didn't do the human testing, and they stopped the animal test because the animals were dying. And then they turned it out for the public. The American people are now the guinea pigs. This is the test program that's going on. Any other vaccine would have been pulled from the market.
Absolutely. It would have been pulled probably within the first few, just right. As we've seen in the past. What was it?
And have you seen any other vaccine that was put out for the public that skipped the animal test?
Never before. Skipped. Especially for children.
And as I've read, they actually started the animal test, and because the animals were dying, they stopped the test.
Correct.
Folks, I think that's important to understand there, that what we're talking about is the American people are now the guinea pigs. This is the test program that's going on. They didn't do the human testing, and they stopped the animal test because the animals were dying. And then they turned it out for the public. And we are now looking at businesses that want to mandate that this experimental vaccine be given to people as a condition of their employment. And yet we have this death count that continues to rise and be totally ignored. Some entities such as healthcare facilities, long-term care facilities, and municipalities are already requiring vaccinations as a condition of employment. My office has heard from multiple people around Texas who don't even work in healthcare, yet are still being required to get the COVID-19 vaccine as a term of their employment. The chief responsibility and constitutional role of our government is to protect the rights of the individual. Employees can take off their helmets, masks, or uniforms at the end of the workday. They cannot remove a vaccine. The mere fact that a person has not received a specific vaccine does not make them a threat to others' health and safety. In contracts, vaccines they have elected not to have may very well be a threat to their own health and safety. It is no secret that the COVID-19 vaccines are not FDA approved. The governor himself recently said, and I quote, "Here is a reality everybody needs to understand. These vaccines have not been formally approved by the FDA, and that means no one can be required to take the vaccine. 30 people a day dying from this vaccine, or one of them. Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, is estimated by most people who follow it as being less than 1% of what actually happens. Folks, this is not about vaccines in general. In the 4 months of 2021, we've had more COVID-19 experimental vaccine deaths than all the vaccine deaths for the 15-year period between 1997 and 2013, plus almost 1,000 heart attacks and over 8,000 hospitalizations. In 1976, there were 45 million people were vaccinated for the swine flu. A mere 15 people died, and I don't say that lightly because any death is very regrettable, but the program was immediately halted because it was considered too risky. 53 deaths, and we've had approaching 4,000 with the COVID. Even vaccines that are FDA approved can still have significant side effects. The FDA's Vaccine Adverse Reporting System contains 44,383 reports of Texans suffering from adverse events following vaccination. The federal government has also paid out more than $4.5 billion to vaccine victims through the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. The law passed in 1986, which created this compensation program, shields vaccine manufacturers and the medical personnel who administer the vaccines from liability. If a business requires you to take a vaccine, all the risk, physically and financially, is on you personally. The business has no responsibility if you have a mild adverse reaction, a lifelong disability, or even die. No one but you have to carry all the risk. The pharmaceutical companies and medical personnel have absolute and total immunity from anything that happens to you. You and your family will carry the entire burden, no matter what it might be, for as long as it may last.
Well, we'll open testimony, begin with invited testimony. We'll call Dr. Richard Bartlett.
The hospitals were overwhelmed. You remember that? We had hospital shifts. We had late care only. If people had COVID, they were told if you have mild to moderate symptoms, just stay home and tough it out with Tylenol. If you have, and then if you're sick enough, go in the hospital and we'll make a ventilator for you. And we started pumping out ventilators. But at the beginning, 90% were dying with ventilators. And we were told to hold our breath and wait for a vaccine. But there is good news. Oxford University finished the Stoic trial. And in the Stoic trial, they found that 90% of hospitalizations for COVID patients could be prevented with early, effective, with one medicine, inhaled budesonide. So I'm saying we have an alternative to their rights. We should protect their individual rights. If they choose to go with early effective outpatient treatment, that should be their right. We shouldn't take that away. 90% of ER visits, 90% of urgent care visits could be prevented, according to Oxford University, the oldest university in the English-speaking world since 1096. 72 Nobel Prize laureates. They're a reliable source of information. They also did a second randomized controlled trial, which is the gold standard for medical and scientific fact. That was the principal trial. And so both of them showed overwhelming success at helping people recover quickly, outpatient, early. It's a medicine that's safe, readily available, inexpensive, and is FDA approved, as opposed to the COVID vaccines, which are not FDA approved and by definition experimental, because we haven't had the time yet to vet their safety and efficacy through and stamp them as FDA approved. But we have medicines that have been out for budesonide's been out for 28 years, FDA approved. Other viral respiratory pandemics, the H1N1 pandemic, we didn't have a vaccine to recover from that. It was herd immunity. That was a deadly disease.
First, the deadly flu and the new and alarming numbers coming in from the CDC tonight. Among the worst flu season in a decade, and it hasn't peaked yet. 39 states now reporting high flu activity. 7 more children lost last week alone. 37 children dying so far this season. But tonight, another age group making news because of how hard this is hitting this year, baby boomers. And what about the caretakers? If you're caring for someone with the flu, should you get Tamiflu as well? Here's ABC's Lindsay Janis tonight.
450,000 Americans could have possibly been saved if they were treated with early effective treatment. Working in the ER, I'm now seeing more people come in who are having complications from the COVID shot. They're short of breath for 2 weeks after they received the shot 2 weeks before. They're having temporary neurologic episodes where their legs don't work and they fall flat on their face. They're having dizziness, shortness of breath, and lightheadedness, and feel like they're going to pass out. And so I'm seeing more, at this point, more complications from the shot in Lubbock, a college town, 18-year-olds coming in excellent health before the shot, coming in 4 days later with 4 days of symptoms, or a gentleman who's short of breath for 2 weeks, or the lady who falls flat on her face. And so it's, I am seeing complications afterwards. That's being reported. But in this last shift, I had no COVID patients come in 48 hours. And as a result of the 7 years of service, the commissioner of Texas HHS gave me the Meritorious Service Award for my contributions. And so I've been sought out for my advice before, and it's been valid. And fortunately, Oxford University has stood up and proved that we have some effective therapies.
They put everybody on hydroxychloroquine right now. We'll stop COVID in its tracks.
This is our local story. It was getting censored across social media. Dart brought up that it's obvious why this is getting censored. President Trump said that hydroxychloroquine works. He retweeted her. And whatever he does, everyone wants to do the opposite. Fox said, you've got to stop.
You need to cease and desist posting about hydroxychloroquine.
The audience was craving answers.
And tell me this is a joke, please.
An Australian biotech company has developed a new treatment it hopes will prevent people dying from COVID vaccine.
People dying from COVID vaccine.
People dying from COVID vaccine. It hopes will prevent people dying from COVID vaccine.
Formerly of Pfizer. Dr. Yeadon, there's going to be a fire. I don't know about the rest of the world, but I can guarantee you there's going to be a firestorm starting in August in this nation, the United States of America, when the mothers in this country that have already been up on this whole mask situation and critical race theory at the school board level. When they go back, and according to Dr. Fauci, this is not Stephen K. Bannon, this is Fauci's interviews with Savannah Guthrie at the morning show at NBC, the Today Show, also what he told the AP, that they're going to start vaccinating the 12 to 15-year-olds, the kids in middle school and high school, as soon as they get back in the fall, and that the school children will be vaccinated by the end of the year. His words, not Bannon's. I want you to walk through. There's going to be a firestorm because this is not the anti-vax crowd. I'm talking about the vaccine-hesitant mothers, right, joined with the anti-vaxxers. But and that, to me, is two-thirds of the country, two-thirds of the mothers. Walk us through your thoughts about this vaccine, particularly for adolescents and for school-aged children and younger.
Yeah, certainly. So just to reiterate, I'm of the industry my whole career, and I'm generally pro-vaccine, but I'm pro-safety, and these COVID-19 vaccines are not safe. Very briefly, they're not safe because the gene-based design makes your body manufacture virus spike protein. And we know, and we've known for years, that virus spike proteins trigger blood clots. So there's plenty of literature. No one can fault the statement I've just made. And Dr. Vodarg and I wrote to the European Medicines Agency in December pointing that out. So that's a fundamental problem. About 75% of the adverse events that occur after vaccination, which are very much higher than usual, relate to thromboembolic events, that is blood clots and bleeding. So what I've just said about the design and the property of spike protein exactly matches these serious adverse events that are emerging. Now, here's the real problem I've got, Steve, and I'm a father and a grandfather. Young people are not susceptible to COVID-19. If they acquire the virus, they usually have no symptoms and they shrug it off very easily. So they're not at risk. It's a crazy thing then to vaccinate them with something that is actually 50 times more likely to kill them than the virus itself.
So I am a PhD in biology. My specialty is evolution. I have some background in immunobiology. To my right, we have Robert Malone. Robert Malone is an MD, PhD?
No, master's.
Master's and MD. He is also, and most significantly here, the inventor of mRNA vaccine technology from back as a graduate student. Am I correct?
Yeah, and I'm also a licensed physician in Maryland.
A licensed physician in Maryland.
Yeah, I'm particularly concerned by all the censorship because it's making so that we cannot have a rational discussion.
So if I'm correct, you, Robert, have had COVID.
I've had COVID, and I've been fully vaccinated with Moderna.
All right.
My carpet cleaner came, and he was wearing a mask. And I said, hey, we're all vaccinated. You can take it off. And he said, you know, I just got I got the Pfizer vaccine, and I had a heart attack 2 minutes later. And so he spent the night in the hospital, and he says, you know, he's kind of recovering from it. And I said, how are you doing now? And he said, you know, still – you know, feeling bad about it. And he mentioned also that his wife, also her hand, she'd, you know, hold a glass like this and her hand would be shaking like this and the water would be coming out. And she was perfect before. So I have two people. We have very few people in my house because of COVID. So the fish guy, the carpet cleaner, and the house cleaner, mm-hmm. right? And so to have not just one person, but him and his wife. I mean, that is like lightning striking twice in the same place. So if it was really a safe vaccine, then what I just saw was impossible. So that's kind of what triggered me off on this. And then I had been on this Canadian physician's call with Dr. Byram Brittle, and he showed this chart. And he said, normally when you vaccinate someone, the vaccine goes in the shoulder, and it stays in the shoulder, in the shoulder area. And what happens is the antibodies are generated and they attack the this antigen in the shoulder and it wipes it out and we're good. But what Byram Brittle did is he did a FOIA request to the Japanese government to look at the biodistribution data. And what he discovered is that it doesn't stay in the shoulder where we all thought it should stay. It goes throughout your entire body. It goes to your brain, to your heart.
So that's two problems. One problem is it isn't where it's supposed to be, ideally.
Where we thought it was, where we thought it was for all the
And the other
previous vaccines,
the other problem, and this is your area of expertise, is that what these vaccines do is they encode spike protein alone so that the immune system will learn to recognize spike protein and will catch it quickly when one is confronted with COVID. But the spike protein itself, we now know, is very dangerous. It's cytotoxic. Is that a fair description?
More than fair. And I alerted the FDA about this risk months and months and months ago. And
so
we had a discussion about
and to be fair, the FDA did not think that the S1 subunit and the spike protein was toxic. And so they knew, the FDA knew about the biodistribution. And one of the scary things is that the biodistribution like peaks in your ovaries. And
so just to nail the point home, they did know.
They did know.
I did send them the manuscripts. So and their determination was
it's a harmless spike protein.
That they didn't think that that was sufficient documentation of the risk that spike was biologically active.
Right. Okay, they did not believe the spike was biologically active. So that was the big mistake.
We now know the spike protein is very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Is biologically.
We also know. So if it was very dangerous, but it did what the brochure on these vaccines says it should do, which is lodge in the membrane of the cells that are doing the transcribing, it would be a lot less destructive, right?
I think that's fair, and you're right. It's not just the the documentation about the vaccine. It's the prior literature that was put out by the people that developed it, that developed these clones. So they were aware that there was a risk of a spike being biologically active and having adverse events if it did not stay stuck to the cells that were transfected that got the RNA and made it. Okay. And they used a genetic engineering method of putting a transmembrane domain on it to ensure that it stayed anchored and stayed put. And there they did limited non-clinical studies to say, looks like it stays stuck.
Right.
We engineered it to stay stuck.
They did.
And they published that. Here's
right.
The thing.
Specially engineered.
Okay. Is that that's generally not good enough in a non-clinical data package. So before we get a product released to use in humans, in the normal situation where we're not in a rush, we have some really rigorous tests that have to be done in animals. And revealing that spike gets cleaved off of expressed cells and becomes free is something that absolutely should have been known and understood well before this ever gotten put into humans. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, that's so what
that's the smoking gun.
Let me just make one thing clearer. You said it very clearly, but lots of people who aren't familiar with this aren't going to get it. Okay. So the RNA gets into the cell. It is translated by the ribosome into a protein. In this case, it's the spike protein, which is the best target on the coronavirus.
We could debate that, but go ahead.
But it's at least a very good one.
It's a
prominent
it's a good,
one.
Good target.
And
nobody
argues
with
that. If the antibodies grab onto it, the most likely thing to happen is that they will block it from doing what it does that facilitates the entry into the cell. So if everything works the way the brochure says, it's a good target.
After about 5 days, though, the antibodies have to be.
So the whole reason to use an adenoviral vector or an mRNA is not just to generate antibodies. And a lot of the data and a lot of us that are deep in this data think that the way that they're really providing the protection is by cellular cytotoxicity. So you're getting CTLs against it. And that's the reason to use this gene therapy-based technology is not just to generate neutralizing antibodies, but to generate cytotoxic T lymphocytes.
Okay, you and I are about to go down the rabbit hole because this is biologically fascinating, which I want to avoid doing. But you just said the reason to use the adenovirus vector, which is with the DNA vaccines, not the RNA vaccines, which is what we were talking about.
I would call it, it's not a DNA vaccine, it's an ad vector vaccine.
Right. It is the use of the
a recombinant virus, which happens to be a DNA virus.
Yeah.
But it's the same basic idea. It's gene therapy technology applied to vaccines.
Okay. It's the same technology and everything downstream of the translation of the spike protein is the same.
Spike protein.
Yeah.
Is the same. And by the way, we have no problems at all with mRNA vaccines.
Right.
It's just this particular vaccine, because of the spike protein and because it breaks, it cleaves off the cell and it goes throughout your body and your brain, your heart, and anywhere that you can have these symptoms that are so varied, whether it's a 16-year-old who can't talk or see 48 hours after injection, or someone who's, you know, handshakes, or someone who's, you know, my carpet cleaner, Tim. He's like disabled now. He's lost $30,000 in terms of his costs, and he's going in for an epidural because he's in such pain. And so these side effects, the victims of this vaccine, they're not being able to tell their story at the press because, you know, Tim says, I try to tell my story and the press ignores him. And we have these groups that, aren't able to get attention.
A large group of people who believe that they have suffered negative consequences was removed from Facebook. So there's very clearly an effort
to 200,000 users just wiped off the planet. Right. Now, if this is a perfectly safe vaccine.
So the censoring has been going on for well over a year. It's well documented. It's unequivocal. And my argument is that by implementing censoring, what we're doing is making it so that signals can't be detected.
Yeah.
People's voices can't be heard. And I'm of the opinion that we have to have free and open discussion, and we have to have full disclosure of risks. And when you censor that, you cannot have that.
It changes everybody's mindset into believing it's safe and effective. And when you have that, you don't report these adverse events as being associated with it because you eliminate it.
You don't want to be the fly in the ointment of a great vaccine.
No, you don't think it's possible, right? So when a doctor sees a miscarriage and says, I've never seen a baby like this in my entire career where it's so bloody and the brain is split in half and so forth. She's never seen anything like it. And she and the woman was vaccinated a month ago, and she's 25 weeks pregnant. When you have that sort of thing, the doctor says, well, it can't be the vaccine because the vaccine is safe. Well, and so they say, well, it must be a genetic defect. And they report it as a genetic defect, and they don't even report it into the VAERS system. So we never see any of these safety signals because everybody is trained to think that it's safe. It couldn't have been the vaccine.
So that's this groupthink problem. And I think it is a real problem.
Let us bring in Dr. Byram Bridle. He's an associate professor of viral immunology at the University of Guelph. Doctor, you've been very, very open on this whole issue. And you know, you're not an anti-vaxxer by any stretch. But what do you think about this inflammation in the heart? And is it an actual threat?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Alex. Yeah, as you said, I'm very much pro-vaccine, but always making sure that the science is done properly and that we follow the science carefully before going into public rollout of vaccines. I hope you let me run with this a little bit, Alex. I'll forewarn you and your listeners that the story I'm about to tell is a bit of a scary one. This is cutting-edge science. There's a couple of key pieces of scientific information that have become privy to just within the past few days that has made the final link. So we understand now, myself and some key international collaborators, we understand exactly why these problems are happening and many others associated with these vaccines. And the story is a bit of a scary one, so just to brace you for this. But I'm going to walk you through this. The science that I'm going to be talking about. I don't have the time here to describe exactly the scientific data, but let me assure you that everything that I'm stating here, that I'm going to state right now, is completely backed up by peer-reviewed scientific publications in well-known and well-respected scientific journals. I have all of this information in hand. I'm in the process of mildly trying to put it all into a document that I can hopefully circulate widely. So your listeners are going to be the first to hear the public release of this conclusion, and I can back it up with science. So this is what it is. The SARS coronavirus 2 has a spike protein on its surface. That spike protein is what allows it to infect our bodies. That is why we've been using the spike protein in our vaccines. The vaccines we're using get our cells in our body to manufacture that protein. If we can mount an immune response against that protein, in theory, we can prevent this virus from infecting the body. That's the theory behind the vaccine. However, when studying the disease, severe COVID-19, everything that you've just described, heart problems, lots of problems with the cardiovascular system, bleeding and clotting is all associated with severe COVID-19. And looking and doing that research, what has been discovered by a scientific community is the spike protein on its own is almost entirely responsible for the damage to the cardiovascular system if it gets into circulation. Indeed, if you inject the purified spike protein into the blood of research animals, they get all kinds of damage to the cardiovascular system. It can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause damage to the brain. Now, at first glance, that doesn't seem too concerning because we're injecting these vaccines into the shoulder muscle. The assumption, all up until now, has been that these vaccines behave like all of our traditional vaccines, that they don't go anywhere other than the injection site. So they stay in our shoulder. Some of the protein will go to the local draining lymph node in order to activate the immune system. However, this is where the cutting edge science has come in. This is where it gets scary. Through a request for information from the Japanese regulatory agency, myself and several international collaborators have been able to get access to what's called a biodistribution study. It's the first time ever that scientists have been privy to seeing where these messenger RNA vaccines go after vaccination. In other words, is it a safe assumption that it stays in the shoulder muscle? The short answer is absolutely not. It's very disconcerting. The spike protein gets into the blood, circulates through the blood in individuals over several days post-vaccination. It accumulates, once it gets in the blood, it accumulates in a number of tissues such as the spleen, the bone marrow, the liver, the adrenal glands. One that's of particular concern for me is it accumulates at quite high concentrations in the ovaries. And then also a publication that was just accepted for a scientific paper, just accepted for publication that backs this up, looked at 13 young healthcare workers that had received the Moderna vaccine, which is the other messenger RNA-based vaccine we have in Canada. And they confirmed this. They found the spike protein in circulation, so in the blood of 11 of those 13 healthcare workers that had received the vaccine. What this means is, so we have known for a long time that the spike protein is a pathogenic protein. It is a toxin. It can cause damage in our body if it gets into circulation. Now we have clear-cut evidence that the vaccines that make our bodies, or the muscles, or the cells in our deltoid muscles, right, manufacture this protein. The vaccine itself plus the protein gets into blood circulation. When in circulation, the spike protein can bind to the receptors that are on our platelets and the cells that line our blood vessels. When that happens, it can do one of two things. It can either cause platelets to clump, and that can lead to clotting. That's exactly why we've been seeing clotting disorders associated with these vaccines. It can also lead to bleeding. And, of course, the heart's involved. It's part, a key part of the cardiovascular system. That's why we're seeing heart problems. The protein, it can also cross the blood-brain barrier and cause neurological damage. That's why also in the fatal cases of blood clots, many times it's seen in the brain. And also of concern is there's also evidence of a study. This has not yet been accepted for publication yet, this one. They were trying to show that the antibodies from the vaccine get transferred through breast milk. And the idea was this may be a good thing because it would confer some passive protection to babies. However, what they found inadvertently was that the messenger RNA vaccines, actually get transferred through the breast milk. So it's delivering the vaccine vector itself into infants that are breastfeeding. Also, with this, now we know the spike protein gets into circulation. Any proteins in the blood will get concentrated in breast milk. Looking into the adverse event database in the United States, we have found evidence of suckling infants experiencing bleeding disorders in the gastrointestinal tract. So,
okay, let me pause you there because I've only got about 45 seconds left. I mean, the bottom line, this will scare a lot of people.
This message, yeah. So this has implications for blood donation. Right now, Canadian Blood Services is saying people that who have been vaccinated can donate. We don't want transfer of these pathogenic spike proteins to fragile patients who are being transfused with that blood. This has implications for infants that are suckling. And this has serious implications for people for whom SARS coronavirus 2 is not a high-risk pathogen, and that includes all of our children. In short, the conclusion is we made a big mistake. We didn't realize it until now. We thought the spike protein was a great target antigen. We never knew the spike protein itself was a toxin. and was a pathogenic protein. So by vaccinating people, we are inadvertently inoculating them with a toxin. In some people, this gets into circulation. And when that happens in some people, it can cause damage, especially to the cardiovascular system. And I have many other, I don't have time, but many other legitimate questions about the long-term safety, therefore, of this vaccine.
Right.
For example, with it accumulating in the ovaries, one of my questions is, will we be rendering young people infertile, some of them infertile? So I'll stop there. Okay. I know it's heavy-heading, but
I'm up against the clock. I need like an hour when I talk to you because you have so much information. And, of course, you're one opinion of many. But, you know, it's interesting because you have a different look at it, and certainly the time will tell on this. But we'll have you on again because I always get an interesting and different perspective from you. Doctor, thank you.
It was my pleasure. Take care.
That is Dr. Bridle, who a lot of you like and like to hear. And again, that's his findings. Again, we get lots of different medical opinions. That'll scare a lot of people, but there are a lot of people already who don't trust the vaccines given this.